So as we just heard, our gospel reading today, it was the parable of the Good Samaritan. And this is a pretty famous story, and it's also quite an important reading, and it's also pretty familiar to many of you, I imagine. And that is a tricky triad for a preacher to navigate: famous, important, and familiar. Because I kind of can't not preach about the parable of the Good Samaritan when it comes up. And yet, what can I possibly say about this parable that you haven't heard before, right? So when I sat down to prepare for this message, I really made sure that I did my homework. I went to all my usual resources. I looked at study Bibles and commentaries, and I looked at the text in the original Greek and in several other English translations, and that's the stuff that I always do. But this time, I started a little different. And it might surprise you where I began, because I started with VeggieTales. Broccoli, celery, the kids' Bible video series with the computer-generated talking vegetables. That's right. Before the scholars and the theologians, I wanted to hear from Larry the Cucumber and Junior Asparagus on this parable. And I got to tell you, I was not disappointed by that. The story on VeggieTales, the Good Samaritan, is called The Story of Flibber-O-Loo, and this is a version of the story that never gets old for me. I've just always enjoyed it, and it's got this really corny poem in it that's fully rhymed all the way through, and it's quite cute. It's only 10 minutes long, and it's on YouTube if you're interested. And now, sometimes in VeggieTales Bible stories, they kind of have to soften the details a little bit to make it more kid-friendly. But they didn't really have to do that much with Flibber-O-Loo. But the only detail they had to modify is that instead of it being about Jews versus Samaritans, it's about one group of vegetables who lives in this one village, and they wear shoes on the top of their head, naturally. And then this other group of vegetables live in this other village, and they wear cooking pots on the top of their heads. And that's a bone of contention for these two groups of vegetables. The story unfolds just exactly the same otherwise. So Larry the Cucumber is a shoe wearer, and he gets robbed and stranded when he's out taking a walk, and he's robbed by a group of scallions, or rapscallions if you like, and they beat him up and they leave him in the ditch, and then he's lying there, and two people from his town come by, some really important people come past, but they don't help him because they're too busy. And then, but eventually he is rescued, but it's by Junior, and he is, he's from the other town, and he wears a pot on his head. And so Junior Asparagus helps the guy, even though he's from the other town. He plays the role of the Good Samaritan. And so it struck me as I was watching that this story resonates, you know, quite strongly for kids who are just barely out of diapers, or maybe still in diapers in some cases. And yet it's also, you know, I learn lessons from it every time I hear it, and I'm 50, and probably people older than me, hopefully, are also still learning from it. And this story is also as relatable and compelling now in the 21st century as it was for Jesus' first listeners back in the first century. It's a really simple message, and it's one that I think we all kind of agree with, right? I mean, we all, I think we can give, you know, intellectual assent to the idea that we should love our neighbors. And I don't think you'd find very many people who would disagree with that statement, and yet, human beings aren't great at obeying this, are they? We've had 2,000 years of sermons and commentaries on the meaning and application of this parable, and yet people, even Christians, or maybe especially Christians, if you remember back to Pastor Stephen's sermon last week, maybe especially Christians are not great at loving our neighbors. So, you know, if we haven't done it in 2,000 years, I don't think that there's a lot of pressure on me to find the gold that we're missing in this parable. I think it's Rather than me trying to come up with something to say about it, I want to focus on listening to the parable and just kind of let each of us respond to what it says to us and how we feel convicted and called. And so that's what we're going to do in our sermon time today. And I'm going to title our sermon, Heroes, Villains, Victims, and Neighbors. What would Junior do? Okay, so let's dive in. So Pat did a great job of reading the parable, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time rehashing it line by line or verse by verse. It'll be more of a summary. And so, but where are we in the gospel? Well, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. The first like chunk, first third or so of the Gospel of Luke is in Galilee, where he works all a bunch of great miracles and teaches and stuff. And now he's on the road to Jerusalem. He's on a collision course with the cross, right? And he knows it. And so does Luke, but Luke isn't in a hurry to get him there, because this section of the Gospel of Luke takes about 10 chapters to unfold. And we're going to be spending time in this travel narrative, as it's called, between now and the end of October in our Gospel readings on Sunday mornings. So anyway, he's on his way to Jerusalem, and he's approached by an expert in the law. And the expert asks him, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And this is an easy question. This is not a question you need to ask your rabbi. This is a question that a school child in Jewish culture would have been able to answer. And so Jesus, he throws it back at him. It's such an easy question. You tell me. And so the expert in the law, he gets it right. He quotes the two iconic Jewish scriptures that basically boil down to love God and love your neighbor. And Jesus agrees, and he confirms that you got it right. And then we see that the expert asks his real question. And who is my neighbor? And I think the question behind the question really is, who isn't my neighbor, right? I mean, I don't have to love certain people, right? But who am I allowed to not love? And so with that, Jesus begins his famous parable. And as we heard, it's about a Jewish guy who's traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. And he gets robbed and beaten and left for dead. And then we read that a priest happened to be going down the same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. So here we have a priest and a Levite who are two religious guys, and they each come upon the scene, and yet instead of helping the man, they go to the other side of the road. They go out of their way to avoid helping him. They go as far away as they possibly can. Now, this to us, I think in the 21st century here, this is scandalous and appalling, right? That the religious folks of all people go try not to help this guy, right? Now, that's scandalous and appalling to us, although maybe sometimes not that surprising, if again, hearkening back to last week's sermon. Scandalous and appalling to us, but to Jesus' original listeners, it might not have been a big deal. They might not have batted an eye that the religious guys didn't help him. Because in the culture of the day, the priests and the Levites, they served in the temple, and they had a special obligation to remain ceremonially pure. So they were forbidden to touch a dead body, even if it was a family member. And so the listeners, including the expert in the law, was probably thinking, yep, that's good. Well done, guys. Way to stay ceremonially pure, right? But I don't think Jesus saw that as much of an excuse. I don't think he saw religious obligation as a good reason to not help someone in need. Because the Jewish scriptures are clear that taking care of people is more important than religious rituals are, more important to God than religious rituals are. Because in Hosea chapter 6, God says this, "For I desire mercy, not sacrifice." And in Isaiah 1, he says this, "Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. Learn to do right. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed. Take up the cause of the fatherless. Plead the case of the widow. And of all people, the priest and the Levite in the parable should know this, and so should the expert in the law that Jesus is talking to. So I think by highlighting the religious people who literally go out of their way to avoid helping the person, I think Jesus is making it clear that religion is no excuse to turn a blind eye to our neighbors in need. If it ever seems like we need to choose between loving God and loving our neighbors, we have lost the plot. God always wants us to show love to God by loving our neighbors. Period. Full stop. So if it's Sunday morning and I'm on my way to church to preach and lead music, and yet I see an elderly lady who needs help changing a flat tire, Jesus wants me to stop and help her, even if it means that I will show up for church late and dirty. I gotta tell you, that's a scary prospect for me. But I think that's the takeaway for people like me, and maybe for people like you too. Anyway, back to our parable. So the priest and the Levite have just avoided helping our poor victim. And then in verse 33, Jesus drops a bomb on his original listeners by introducing the hero of the story, a Samaritan. Gasp! And then enter Junior Asparagus, stage right. Now for us, the word Samaritan, it literally means someone who goes out of their way to help others. But that's only because of this parable. It's only because this parable is so well known that the parable is kind of hijacked and reinterpreted the meaning of that word. Because back in Jesus' day, the Samaritans were despised by the Jews. The phrase "good Samaritan" would have been an oxymoron. The Samaritans were like the archenemies of the Jews, because they were descendants of Jews who had intermarried with Assyrians several hundred years earlier. And they still lived in the area between Galilee in the north and Judea in the south. Samaria was kind of in the middle here. And the Samaritans, they used some of the same holy writings as the Jews, but they had their own temple and their own customs. And they didn't think that their temple took a back seat to the Jewish temple. They thought in Jerusalem, they thought their temple was the real deal. And so the Jews saw Samaritans as half Jews, or maybe false Jews, and they hated them. And the feeling was mutual. So when the Jews in Jesus' day told stories about Samaritans, the Samaritan was always going to be the villain and never the hero. And yet, Jesus tells us it's a Samaritan who takes pity on the Jewish victim. The Samaritan comes upon the scene and he chooses to see this Jew lying in the ditch, not as a villain, but as the victim. And so he takes pity on him. He sets aside his animosities. He sets aside his schedule and his money. And he gets down in the ditch, in the dirt, with this villain slash victim, and he helps him, right? He patches him up. He lifts him up, takes him to an inn, and pays the guy's bill out of his own pocket. That's a significant sacrifice, isn't it? And then in verse 36, Jesus ends the parable and he asks this: which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Now you notice, the expert didn't even use the word Samaritan. It seems like he deliberately avoided that word, like in the same way that the Jews in the story deliberately avoided helping the man, he deliberately went around saying the word Samaritan. And I think that's because when he heard the parable, he couldn't help but put himself in the place of the Jewish man, our victim. And he found that experience pretty uncomfortable. I mean, think about it. Imagine that you have been beaten and robbed and left for dead. And the people from your tribe avoid you. They go out of their way to not help you. And then you're finally rescued, but it's by a person who belongs to a tribe that you hate. Hate. And then this person who belongs to the wrong tribe gets up close and personal and touches you, soothes your wounds. And when you're at your most helpless, he lifts you up like the dead weight that you are at that point and takes care of you. So you're completely defenseless and completely at the mercy of your enemy, and he saves your life and takes care of you. I bet that was, for the expert in the law hearing the story for the first time, I bet that was eye-opening and humbling and maybe even humiliating. And I think that was Jesus' point. Now, here in Calgary in the 21st century, it might be tough for us to fully relate to how uncomfortable this story was for Jesus' first Jewish listeners, right? Because we don't have tribal enemies in the same way that Jews and Samaritans were for each other. But there are still villains in our stories, aren't there? So maybe to put ourselves in the shoes of the victim, maybe we need to imagine the Good Samaritan as one of our villains. So imagine maybe that you're the one in the ditch and the person who helped you, bandaged your wounds and lifted you up. Well, let's start by imagining that person as a good Hell's Angels gang member, the good Hell's Angel. That sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? But maybe we should get more personal than that. Maybe let's start on religious lines. Maybe it was the good Catholic or the good fundamentalist or the good liberal Christian or the good conservative Christian. Maybe the good Muslim. Or maybe for you, maybe it's less about religious categories and more about societal or political ones. So maybe the person who helped you is the good anti-vaxxer. Or the good pro-vaxxer. Or maybe it was the good NRA member, you know, or the good white supremacist. The good LGBTQ plus pride crusader or anti-pride crusader. The good pro-life activist or the good pro-choice activist. Whoever it is that when you hear that label, you can't imagine the word good being placed in front of it. Whoever that is for you, that's who I'd like you to imagine helping you when you needed help the most. When you're in desperate need and the people from your own tribe will not even give you the time of day. So imagine your ideological villain becomes your personal hero and asks nothing in return. Maybe now we can begin to relate to how uncomfortable Jesus wants this parable to make us. So, which one was a neighbor, Jesus asks, and then the one who had mercy on him is the response. And then Jesus drops another bomb. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Live the way the Good Samaritan lived. It made you uncomfortable to think of receiving that kind of help from your enemy? Good. Now go and give that kind of help to your enemy. Do what the Good Samaritan did. Ask yourself, what would Junior do? And then go and do likewise. So who is my neighbor? Everyone is my neighbor. Because regardless of labels or categories that we take on or that we push on other folks, whoever we assign those categories to, that person at their core is a beloved child of God, fearfully and wonderfully made in the image and likeness of God. Every villain and every hero in our worldview is fearfully and wonderfully made in the image and likeness of God. And each of us falls short of who we are created to be. We all are in need of God's grace. Grace from God and grace from each other. Now, that doesn't mean our categories are meaningless or that we shouldn't advocate for what we believe is right. But I think it does mean that we're not allowed to use our categories as excuses for not loving our neighbors. And what does it mean to love our neighbors? Well, hopefully this perspective does impact how we feel about our neighbors, right? Hopefully, we'll be more compassionate and more patient and more tolerant towards the people that we label as our villains. But remember that Jesus said to go and do likewise. So this parable isn't primarily about having warm, fuzzy feelings for everybody. So that's a bit of a relief. But much more terrifyingly, it's about what we do for the people that we don't have warm, fuzzy feelings for. This parable is about showing love to those who need it, whether we think they deserve it or not. So as we wrap up, I have some questions for us all to reflect on this week. Who are the villains in your story? And from whose perspective might you be the villain? In what way does your politics or your religion or your politics or your views on ethnicity, in what way do these things get in the way of you loving your neighbor? What could it look like for you to set aside your principles and prioritize people so you can love your neighbor in a new way this week? What is Jesus saying to you through this parable? And what are you going to do about it? So like I said earlier, the VeggieTales version of this story has a special place in my heart. And so I'm going to close the sermon the way that Junior Asparagus sums up the story at the end of the video with his little song. Now, the song is cute, and it's even pretty corny, but it's also profound and gets back to my original point about how this is relatable and compelling for people at any age. So anyway, you can sing it with me if you know it. You have a shoe and I have a pot, but when we look deeper, there's more that we've got. God made you special, and now I can see if you're special to God, you're special to me. Love your neighbor. When someone helps you, then you'll understand. When you love your neighbor, loving means lending a hand. I've spoken and sung in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.